Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Pei Tet. And we're holding at the two dots on Pei Chet Omud Beit, seven lines from the bottom. So one of the things that we still have left open in the Mishnah is the mechanism and the purpose of what the Chachomim were metaken in the case that a woman gets married based on a special heter of Beis Din to rely on Eid Echad. And what we came out yesterday is that that heter is predicated on the fact that we have a strong basis to believe that he's dead because of the very takana that we made in the Mishnah to be machmir aleha besofa. And the reason that we did that was in order to prevent problems of agunot. So now we have to get into how exactly those 16 different takonas that we made in the Mishnah that range from the status of her children being mamzerim and her needing a get from both husbands to the bittul of her ksuva to her inability to collect mizonot even from before. Akiva, like, could you turn off those big lights that are like behind? It's very, if we could just see your face, it would be great. I didn't mean to, you should withdraw completely. It just was in my eyes, you know? So the question over here is, how exactly did they make these takanas? Okay, so we're up to tzricha get mizeh umizeh. She requires a get. Now, it has to make sense to require a get. You can't just arbitrarily say give a get. As we've pointed out many times, the Rabbanan are only metaken something that fits into some general idea, or there's a strong basis for making a takana that people will be nervous. So first we thought that there's a real takana over here. So our first approach is like this. Bishlama mirishon teboy get, elamisheni amai. Making her get a get from the second husband when the second guy wasn't a husband at all. It was znut ba'almahu. I mean, it was completely and totally adulterous. I mean, not on purpose, but the bottom line is, we never heard of such a thing. Getting a get for an adulterous relationship? So it seems to have no basis whatsoever. Omer of Huna, it's a pure gezerah. Since it looks like they were married, we're afraid that people will assume that it was a real marriage. How will they explain that it was a real marriage? Because they will think that, you know what probably happened is her husband left her, went away on a business trip supposedly, fell in love with somebody and sent her a get. And then she went and got married to somebody else. So now, because they don't know the details that her husband died, I'll be Beis Din and so on. So then when they see that she leaves the second guy without getting a get from the second guy, so they may come up with some idea that it's possible in certain circumstances that a woman should go out without a get. So because of that, we made a gezerah that she needs a get. Now, listen, just between the two of us, I mean, we know that all of these things are put into place, as the Gemara said yesterday. I mean, it's not that she really needs a get, and it shouldn't therefore make sense that we really make this takana because we're honestly afraid that people are going to think that she went out without a get after a divorce. I mean, how likely is that? Is it, normally we say that the Rabbanan are not going to get involved in something that is unlikely or that rarely could occur. So the truth is, we're going to see that this is merely a mechanism. It's not a true chashash. We're pretending it's a chashash. But in order to get to that point where we come to understand that there is a concept of making a takana, which is based on only a supposed chashash, which we never realized before, that you can use a chashash as a mechanism for a takana, you see, even where the takana per se is not really necessary. So right now we think that it's really necessary and that people are going to make this mistake. So then if that's the case, asked the Gemara, then the Mishnah is inconsistent. Because the Seifa, Yachi Seifa Diktani, Omrula Meit Baalech V'nit Katsha. We haven't gotten to this yet, but I mean, the bottom line is that we have a similar situation where she was only mitkadeshet to this guy. And she was not nesuah, so she never slept with the second guy. And then her husband shows up. So this is now a different case than the case that we offered before. It says over there that she actually is allowed to go back to her husband under those circumstances because she never really slept with the other guy. She was only mitkadeshet. And so because of that, it would be all right. But the problem is, if you're really worried that people are going to say that she was married and that she went out without a get, what's the difference whether she slept with the guy or she didn't sleep with the guy? I mean, everybody knows that they made a party and she accepted the ring, Ariat Mukudeshetli, and so on. So why wouldn't we be afraid, Otam Nami Nema, that in a case, people will assume that the first husband had divorced her, and now this guy had given her kedushin, and now she walked out. We have exactly the same unreasonable, I must say, chashash, even in that case, there should be no difference. Answers the Gemara, well, you know what? She does need a get over there. I mean, I guess, and even though the Mishnah didn't say that, but I mean, I guess it obviously has got to be true, right? Says the Gemara, no, not right. Because if that were the case, that she actually needs a get, so then there'd be another problem. Because if she needs a get, and we're allowing her to go back to her first husband, so then people are going to make another mistake. And that's a real serious mistake. Because there people can think that, oh, I saw a guy remarry a wife that he had after he divorced her, and she got married to somebody else, and that is usser. And therefore, no matter what you do, it doesn't work. Because if you say she doesn't need a get, like the Mishnah implies, because it doesn't say she needs a get if it was only a kedushin, so then it doesn't make sense because what about the gezeira that people will think that someone will go out without a get? And if you say she does need a get, so then what about the same gezeira, which is more reasonable, that then since you're allowing her to go back to her old husband, then people will think that after it was really a divorce, and after a divorce, you're allowed to remarry. So the Mishnah doesn't make sense at all, utilizing this approach of our fear that people will say, well, you know what? We'll have to say that the Mishnah, that which is the end of this Mishnah later on, the Mishnah talks about Kedushin as opposed to Nisuin, actually is going like Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur. Now, Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur says that, in fact, a Marzer Grushato is mutter if she had never slept with her second husband and she was only Mikudesha to the second husband. So what are you saying? People will say exactly what that would be true. Because our Libet of Yosef and Kippur, it's true. If a guy divorces one, a wife, she goes and she accepts Kedushin, but never actually gets to the chuppah with the other guy, and the other guy either dies or divorces her, she is allowed to go back to her first husband, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur. So therefore, it makes sense to say, well, she needs a get from the second husband because of the gzera that maybe people will say that an ishishish went out without a get. And nonetheless, she's allowed to go marry her husband because there's no problem, since she would anyway, even if it was for real, and the husband really had divorced her, she would be able to go back to him. And he says, Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur, minas nisu'in, and only minas nisu'in, is a ma'azir grushato asura, but mina erosin, she's actually muteret. No, that doesn't make sense. Because if you're saying that the case in the Mishnah later, where there was only a kedushin, she can go back to her husband because of Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur, and she actually does need a get, then it doesn't make sense because it says over there, Amidiktani Seifa, right there in that Mishnah, which is the end of our Mishnah. So Amidiktani Seifa, it says that in the event that she now goes ahead and she walked out of the other guy, and you're saying the other guy, the second guy gave her a get. So then if the second one gave her a get, how does it say over here that if Natan la'acharon get, lo pasulam and akuhuna, what? If she's not pasul to the kuhuna, so then obviously she didn't need the get. So how can you say she needed a get? Because don't tell me, well, because it was only a gzeira, she didn't really need a get. I don't give a hang. Because the halacha is, remember, that a kohen is not allowed to marry even where there was the smell of a get. Remember? Reach haget, it's called. Please put that down in your list of concepts. So a reach haget is enough to Aser for a Kohen. I mean, obviously, if the Rabbanim were Mechayev, the second guy, like we're claiming now, to give her a get in the event that there was only Kiddushin, so then she would be puzzled for a Kohen, because it's certainly as bad as a Reach HaGet. You're telling me it was a get that the Rabbanim required. So how could the Mishnah say he didn't puzzle her in a Kohuna? That's absurd. You're right. Okay, you know what? You don't need a get in the case of Kiddushin. You know why? Because people will say, they're not going to say that, oh, Anashis Ish was Yotze Belo Get. They'll say, you know what? Obviously, a woman doesn't walk out without a get. I mean, any child knows a woman needs a get. So how come this woman went back to this guy without getting a get? Must be because it was a mistake in the Kiddushin. So there had been a condition in the Kiddushin, such as the guy said, this is the way Rashi understands it. So that turns out he wasn't a Kohen, and she had only wanted to marry a Kohen, and they had made the whole wedding on the basis of his being a Kohen. So then the marriage is annulled, right? So people will say, okay, you know what? If she walked out without a get, obviously there's something we don't know about. The guy presented himself as something that he wasn't, and therefore the whole marriage was a joke. So it was annulled. There are cases like that. So Seifa, Amri Kedushe Ta'utu. Wait a minute. What do you mean? If that's true, then you could say that back in the Reisha. So in the Reisha also, they could say, why would they think that she walked out? The Reisha remembers talking about where the second guy actually took her to the chuppah. Maybe they were married for years. I don't know. But the bottom line is that if you're telling me that we really are afraid that people will think that an Eshet Ish walked out without a get, and now you're telling me, but really it's more reasonable to say that people will figure that there must be a reason for it. Probably there was a mistake in the marriage. And by the way, gentlemen, as Tosis points out, there sure as heck was a problem. She got married thinking that she wasn't married to another guy. And obviously, that's a given. If it turns out that she was married to another guy, so then the entire marriage to the second guy should be ipso facto annulled milachatchila. I mean, the Bichlava Mishnah doesn't make sense. Because why are we saying that there was a real marriage over here to us? I mean, so people will have a definite right to say it's an Isurei Ta'ut, and they'd be right. It was an Isurei Ta'ut. In fact, that would explain everything. So why not say it's an Isurei Ta'ut? The truth is that we were wrong. When we said that people were really going to think this, that an Eishes Ish is Yotze Belo Get, it's not that they really think that. It's that we are using that as an excuse for a gezeira that we want to make. And we have our own agenda here, okay? Part of our agenda, remember, is to make life hell for her. And another part of our agenda is to make it clear to people that if we're requiring a get from the second guy, that means that the first guy is not allowed to take her back. And if he does, his children are mamzerim and so on. In other words, we have to be consistent in order to present the picture that we're presenting of her actually losing out on everything. So we can't just arbitrarily come up, well, she doesn't really need a get, but her children are mamzerim if she goes back to the other. I mean, it just doesn't add up. So because of that, we're doing something to provide consistency. And therefore, it's all part of the same issue. The question is, as we pointed out before, it's never enough to decide why you're doing something. The Rabbanan can't do something arbitrarily. There needs to be a mechanism, always. There's always two things. Remember, we've had this conversation many times. So what is the mechanism is what the Gemara is talking about. The mechanism is to say that we've made a gezeira that people might think that an Eishes Ish went out without a get. So in the event that it was Kiddushin, we don't apply that. And we say, well, people, you know, they don't really think that if there was just Kiddushin. I think it's Kiddushin Tos. Why? Because since she didn't do anything wrong in this case, she only planned getting married to the guy by accepting Kiddushin, but she never slept with him. She never went to the chuppah with him. So because of that, we don't need to present this picture. And if we don't need it, so then let's be honest. people are not really going to make that assumption. So the whole thing adds up if you take it in its entire perspective. And that would explain why in the case of the latter part of our Mishnah, which we haven't gotten up to yet, but in the latter case of the Mishnah, that over there, we will not make a gezerah. So therefore, in the event that the Rabbanan have a reason to be kines, so the Gemara answers, well, if she got married to the guy, the Rabbanan gave her a knas, and they pretended that she needs this get based on this chashat. I understand. So then why don't we give her a knas in the second case? Because she didn't do anything wrong. That's the point. Reisha of the Isura, save for the law of the Isura, look at Surah Rabbanan. So we only give the knas where we're trying to make life tough on her, where there's a reason that we're trying to make life tough on her. Okay. Now, we also have to explain how it is that she has no ketubah. Because, I mean, this is rather draconian. I mean, what we're talking about over here, remember that one of the things that we spoke about is that even if she had borrowed money to provide for her simple support, which he was chayef to her when he went overseas, and she borrowed, and now, 2 years later, the debts are coming due, he's back around, he doesn't have to pay back. I mean, like, how do we manage to do that? Wasn't he actually chayef to repay these debts? I mean, the Rabbanan just go arbitrarily and deprive her of money that's hers? So the reason for this is, and remember, that's not the mechanism. We're still going to have to ask what's the mechanism. But the reason, that is to say, the purpose of all of this is why. Because my time at Akin L'Rabbanan Ketubah, how come there is Bichlal, a Takon of Rabbanan of a Ketubah? This Tosfos points out, does that really mean it's only a Takon of the Rabbanan? I mean, don't we say, and certainly the Ashkenazim, with the Chozil Chimidi Raita, we say, isn't it a takana, it's a deraisa, kamor habetulot. Okay, so Tosis explains that we're talking about in those cases where she, let's say, the almona. So we have a takana of ketuvah. But what is the whole point of that takana? Kedesh lo te kalaba enav lahotzia. The ketuvah exists in order for the marriage to be defined as something that is externally real. Not just an agreement between people. So if he changes his mind, okay, like the Arabs do, you know, you send her an SMS, you're no longer my wife. Then you go into the whorehouse, then you come out, you say, now you're my wife again. You know, this is what they do. So that is not considered to be a marriage. That is considered to be a casual relationship. And therefore, the Rabbanan made it, Kadesh Lote Kalabe Navlotziah. You want a divorce, there's going to be a lot of consequences to that divorce. But in this case, we want her to get away from this relationship, right? Because we say that that's part of the whole idea. We're trying to make it into an adulterous relationship. So in this case, let it be as easy as possible for him, because we don't want either of those husbands to be continuing with that. That's our purpose here. So, and what about the other stuff, the perot and the mizonot and the bela'ot? Like, how did we do that? Well, that's part of the ketubah. It is? Yes. Because even though it's not maybe always written in the ketubah, but so what? The deal is that tna'e ketubah ke ketubah dami. Any dinim that have to do with tna'im, that the ketubah, tna'i in this case means that the ketubah actually stipulates this is what you're chayav. So anything that is part of that takana has exactly the din of the ketubah. Where the ketubah is valid and effective, all of those parts of it are valid and effective. But where the ketubah per se is not effective, then all of the additional, what we call tna'im, this does not mean a tna'im in the sense of a condition, it means a stipulation. So all the stipulations would be batal. And even if she had taken that money, she had accepted the money, the guy came back and he repaid the loans and so on, she has to pay him back. From either of those husbands. So not la mizeh o mizeh. She has to return it. Says, well, obviously she has to return it. Why wouldn't she have to return it if she took money that she's not supposed to be getting? Pshita. Says, not at all. It's not at all pshita. There are major differences between places where the court will not give someone money. So ein motzi'in miyado, right? Whereas in that case, if the Baal Din that had sued, had taken the money, and now we want to take it away from the Baal Din and give it back to the other person, we won't do. And that's called tafas. If somebody took the money without the court sanction, and then he was sued by the other person. There are many cases where lo mafkina mina. So I would have thought that in this case, if she already collected, she doesn't have to pay back. Even that, if she was tafsa, she took the money from his bank account. Nonetheless, she has to repay it. And furthermore, we say havlad mamzer. So the vlad being a mamzer is very strange. I mean, why would the vlad from the first husband, after he comes back and the second husband turns out never to have been there, and she was the wife of the first guy and is still the wife of the first guy? So, I mean, we need to figure out exactly what we mean by saying havlad mamzer. But before we can do that, we need to take a look at the way that the Rabbanan deal with issues similar to this, in which something was done wrong, and the Rabbanan create a situation that is not really correct in terms of the d'oraisa psak. Because that's what we're doing over here. We're saying a perfectly valid marriage is creating mamzerim. Now, interestingly enough, we do have, and we've done this many times throughout the Masechet, we relate the halachas of truma, trumas and maisers, we've been relating them to the inyanim of our Mishnayos and Yibam. So let's take a look at another one of these interesting relationships. We have a Mishnah Masechet Trumot, and it goes like this. Tanata. Now this is, remember, what we're doing over here, don't get confused, we're popping down into a completely tangential sugya, which is a very bad tangential sugya, because the Gemara has not even indicated up front why I'm bringing this, right? It just all of a sudden starts talking about a Mishnah and Trumas. So what we need to understand is that after we go through all of the inyanim in Trumas about where the Rabbanan considers something that didn't exist to exist or that did exist not to exist, which is what we're doing over here, a marriage that does exist, b'diraisa, we're pretending it doesn't exist. In fact, we're going to see something very similar in the Dinim of Trumas, and that's the reason that we're going to get into a very long tangential discussion about the Truma. In the end, is going to reflect on our Mishnah, and we're going to ask from one Mishnah on the other, and why it doesn't seem to be a consistent approach of the Rabbanan. Okay, so we're taking a few minutes off to go into understanding the Mishnah in Trumas. So, over there in Trumas, it says in the Mishnah like this, Ein Tormim Min HaTamei Al HaTohor. You're not allowed to take off truma, which is from part of the crop that became tamei, and use it to potter, in other words, to be matir, the tevel, on something that was tohar. So this is something that you can't do because you're going to be mafsid the kohen. The kohen was supposed to be able to eat the truma. Now he's not going to be able to eat the truma. Omnam, he will be able to burn the truma, but obviously something that needs to be burned as firewood in his oven is nowhere near as useful or as valuable to him as having food that he can eat. So it doesn't make sense to give him tamei, which is not worth very much, for taira, and that would be similar to the idea of minha ra'a al hayafa. And the taira says that it's michelbo. Truma is always taken from the best thing. And you didn't do that. Barim chemet chelbo. And over here, you're not taking off something good. You're selecting something bad. So it says there in the halacha, what if you did? If you did it, if it was done b'shogeg, and you had no idea at the time that it was tamei, so then the truma is considered to be truma, and is remains truma, and he can eat the part that was tar, you yourself can eat. And that's because it was b'shogeg. But what if it was done b'mezid? Then forget about it. We cancel what you did. Lo asav lo klum. You didn't do a darn thing. Now, we have a big machlokas about what do we mean when we say you didn't do a darn thing. Do we mean you didn't achieve a darn thing, or do we mean you literally didn't do a darn thing? Now, that's very different, because Rav Chisda says it means you didn't do a darn thing. Lo asav lo klum, kol ikar. In other words, even the Tumah that you gave to the Kohen, when you find out, not when you find out, sorry, we're talking about the Mezid. When the Kohen knows that it's Truma that was Tomei, he simply gives it back to the guy because now it's not Truma, it's Tevel. So this means that something that was Truma now becomes Tevel, which is crazy. How is that possible? Because B'Diraisa it should be Truma, and that's now starting to bother us. You can start seeing now the interrelationship with our Mishnah. But that's what it means. Rabbi Natan Rabbi Oshaya means, no, what do you mean? You can't turn something back to Tevel if it's really Truma. It means you didn't achieve. And therefore, lo asava lo klum, litakenet ashirayim. You're not allowed to eat the Tevel until you give new Truma. You're going to have to take off Truma again. But what you gave to the Kohen keeps. The Truma Tmeya, he keeps. And this is going to turn out that you give Truma twice. So in other words, what we're saying is that the leftovers, which you had given the Truma for, even though that is midiraisa, a kosher to eat, and what we're saying is that now it becomes not kosher to eat, midirabbanan. So obviously you're going to have to take off only from Truma that's a drabbanan on this, because otherwise you're going to be taking off minachiyav alaptur, which is going to create a lot of problems. Okay. So according to Reb Nosson Reb Oshaya, when we say you didn't do a darn thing, we mean you got yourself into real trouble. You're going to have to give Truma twice. So now, let's take a look at the basis of this machlokas between Rav Chista and Rav Nosson Rav Oshaya. Rav Chista did not want to say what Rav Nosson Rav Oshaya said, namely that you're going to have to take Truma again, but that actually the first Truma is Truma. Why didn't he want to say it? Because he says, look, if you're going to do that, and you're going to tell him that it's Truma, so then it does not make sense to assume, because remember we're talking about a case of amazing, and the guy was giving off something that he shouldn't have done, and he knew darn well he shouldn't do. He's taking off the worst part of his produce to give to the Kohen. So do you honestly think that a guy like that is going to listen to you when you tell him, well, you're going to have to do it again? Okay, if I have to do it again, so give me back what I gave. No, you have to give it twice. Yeah, okay, right. And so he'll say, okay, so obviously you're playing games with me. I mean, the Truma is good Truma. The Haraya, the Kohen gets to keep it. Be darned if I'm going to take it off again just because you rabbis come up with some crazy plan. So he's not going to listen. So if he's not going to listen, what's going to happen is that the poor Kohen is going to be actually bearing the brunt of all of this because he ends up losing his Truma Tahira. Therefore, it's better, said Rav Chista, that we tell the guy, okay, you take back the old Truma because it wasn't Truma, and you give the Kohen good Truma. So, says the Gemara to Rav Chista, I mean, obviously, this is a little bit of a strange thing. I mean, how do we call Truma not Truma if it is Truma just because we want to make sure that the Kohen gets Truma and we're afraid this guy won't listen to us? I mean, does this make sense? But this is going to be where we get closer to an understanding of how we can do what we do in the Mishnah as we ask how we can do what we do over here in the Sechet Truma. Okay, so now the Gemara says, Rav Chista, there's something that doesn't add up because there's another Mishnah. Mishnah Mi'ad Etznam. There's another Mishnah right there in the next parak in Trumas that says like this. A guy takes cucumber and he takes off Truma from this cucumber for a pile of cucumbers, right? And now we open up the cucumber and it's inedible. It's mara. It's bitter. He takes out a watermelon for a whole pile of watermelons. We open up the watermelon, which was Truma, and it's completely rotted inside. Wasn't visible from the outside. So the halacha over there is that it's Truma, and he has to go and take Truma again. So apparently we're not afraid that a person will not listen to us, and we could tell him to take Truma twice. Says Rav Chista, well, I understand what the comparison is. Over there, he didn't know. Over here, he does know. I mean, once a guy already showed himself, alone, you're falling asleep. Once a guy showed himself to be someone who doesn't care, and he's ready to go out and do shalo kedin in giving truma, of course we're worried that he's not going to listen. But over here, The guide had, he wanted to give, so he thought it was a beautiful watermelon. Turns out that the watermelon was rotted, so why wouldn't he listen to you if you tell him you better give another watermelon? So Shogeg amazed Karamita. Understand, what kind of question is that? Shogeg did not do any itzer, so why wouldn't he listen to us? We have no reason to think he's not a Jew that's going to do the takana. But in this case over here, he's amazed, so he probably won't listen. And then the Kohen's going to end up without getting good truma. So it's better for us to cancel the original truma in order to make sure that the Kohen will get good truma. Okay, fine. All right, I understand. You got a point. But I still have a problem. I'll tell you why. Because I can also bring you another Mishnah in which even a Shogeg, we say the same thing. Because Rami Shogeg got Shogeg. I'll point out your contradiction even in cases of Shogeg, because over here, where the guy took the Tamei stuff, b'Shogeg, right? So what did we say? We said Trumato Truma. And it's fine, and we're Matir the Teva right away, because it was b'Shogeg. And yet, in the case of the watermelon, which is rotten, over there we say, yes, it's Truma, that part's consistent. But it says that he has to take off truma again before he's allowed to eat the teva that was his. So why do we not need a second hatrama in the case of the tame, but we do need a second hatrama in the case of the watermelon? Well, says the Gemara, there's a big difference. I mean, you can't look at something and know whether it's tame or tahar. I mean, we don't have a Geiger counter for Tuma that counts Tuma emissions, right? So we'd have no idea whether this thing is Tame or Tahar. So we don't expect you to be able to detect that it was Tame. If we found out later through whatever, somebody comes along and he says, oh my gosh, that was the bowl that so-and-so had touched when he was Tame. Okay, there's no way I could have known that. Mashenkin, over here, it's considered to be Karov Lemezit. There's a reason why he should be forced to take off Truma again, because he was a bad boy. You should make sure that what it is that you're giving to the Kohen is not spoiled. For heaven's sakes, there's this thing that you plug into your iPhone and you put it over the produce, and it can detect in the supermarket whether there's chemicals that are emitted by a terrible watermelons. And how come you went into the supermarket without your iPhone? And if you went into a Frum supermarket and they check iPhones before, you should have gone to another supermarket. Anyway, so the point is that there's always a way. What's the way, actually, if you don't have an iPhone? So, I mean, the Mepharshim say, listen, before you're going to give something to a Kohen, you can always take a little bit of it off. And you can take Trumas and Maisers from that little bit. And then taste the teva, see whether it's in good shape. The watermelon good, is the cucumber good? And then give it to the Kohen. I mean, if you care about Baharim Bechemet Chalbo Mimeno, I mean, you should be makbid. And therefore, the fact that you weren't makbid, you said, oh, it looks okay, I'll give it to Barnea. You know, and then poor Barnea's got himself a job at dumping these big watermelons. Then that was not right. So because of that, we want you to give Truma again. But when it comes to Truma Vatira, we don't give that. That doesn't bother me. That's consistent. Okay. All right, wait a minute, Rav Chisda. Hold on a sec over here. So we also have another stira, okay, in what you're saying, and that is a contradiction between the mazit to mazit, okay? Because, I mean, over here we said that if you do it be mazit, that the halacha is that it becomes completely, according to you, completely, you didn't do a darn thing, right? So how come over here it says, b'mezid lo asaklun, and basically the truma is not truma at all. The whole thing is canceled. But over there we have a Mishnah, this time not from trumas, but in Demai, but over there it says, that atorei mishe'inu nakuv ala nakuv. Now remember, there's a big difference, and please put this down in your list of concepts. And that is a difference between a kli that is nakuv and a kli that is not nakuv. So where you have a hole in the bottom of a pot, anything that's grown in it is considered to be mechubel karka and is mechuyev as if it were in the ground. But if it's ein nakuv, then it's not considered to be mechubel to the ground. And therefore, the truma from that is only a derabanan chiyev. What did we say before that we need to add to the list of ideas? I mentioned to you, put that in. Remember? Because I want Moshe just showed up and he's keeping a list of this. Okay, we'll remember. What was it? Yeah, thank you very much. Reah Haget, another very important concept. Please add that in. Anyway, so over there it says that if you have an atzitz nakuv and an atzitz she'eno nakuv, and you grew grain in both of them, and you took off the truma in that case from the grain that was only chayev mitarabana, from the eno nakuv, and you took it off on the one that was an atzitz nakuv, which was chayev in the diraisa. So the halacha is that it's truma, but he has to give truma again. So in other words, what we say is that what it was that he took the truma on for, of course, it still remains tevel, because you can't take from a ptur on the chiyav. But even so, we say that the truma that you originally took off also is considered to be truma, even though it wasn't truma b'diraisa, but we don't just mevatel it, right? Okay, so if that's the case, why do we not say the same thing we said over here? Over here we said that it all goes back to being tevel, and over there we say, no, it doesn't go back to being tevel, even though it was done wrong, it is truma. I mean, according to you, we are always choshesh that a guy is not going to do it correctly if we allow the first truma to be truma. No, says Rav Chisda, it's not the same. Because in the case where you have an atzitz nakuv and an atzitz she'enu nakuv, over there you're telling the guy to take off truma from somewhere that he hadn't taken off truma yet, right? You're telling him, excuse me, sir, you have to go to the pot that was the one you thought you were taking truma for. You have to take truma from that. Now, that makes sense to him. So I took truma from a different pot. You're telling me that pot's no good. Okay, I can understand that. So now I have to give truma from this. I'll give truma from that. But in a case where you're telling me the Tamei Vitar is mamish from the same pot, it's from exactly the same plot of land or pot, whatever the case is, I had a bowl of some of the stuff that somebody had touched was Tamei, you're telling me that that is good truma, and the Kohen keeps it, but I have to give truma again? No way, Jose. I'm not giving truma twice. So there's a big difference between the two cases. So if there's two pots, the guy will do it because it makes sense to him. So betray mani tzayit, bechad mani lo tzayit, the guy's not going to listen to me. Okay. So now I understand, sort of, Rav Chisda. I mean, I don't understand how we managed to do this. How do we take truma and unmake its truma? Fine, that we'll discuss. But remember, we're on a tangent that is meant to get us to a discussion from our Mishnah about how we can do these kind of things, of taking something that has one halacha midiraisa and then change it midrabbanan. And that's what we're concerned about over here. So as the Gemara. Now I understand Rav Chisda, more or less. What about according to Rav Nosson Rav Oshia? He says, lo asav lo klum, doesn't mean that it's not truma, it is truma, it just means l'taken shirayim. It didn't work, but it still is truma itself. And the Kohen goes and he puts it in his oven and burns it right away without any further ado. But that also seems to be wrong from the same Mishnah that we just quoted in Masechet Demai, because read on. That Mishnah continues on to say that if you did it the other way around, you took truma out of the atzitz that is nakuv, which is a diraisa, and you made it as truma for the produce which is in the eno nakuv, which is not a diraisa, and therefore it is minachiyuv alaptur. So we treat the truma as truma, but of course the Kohen can't eat it. Why can't the Kohen eat it? Because it's tevel. Truma is only itself kosher to eat because that is the way that we're metakein tevel, right? So the Torah says, okay, separate out the truma part from the tevel and the rest of it, the chulin. But in this case, even though you said it's truma, it isn't really truma, because you were taking out on something that was potter. So how could that truma be? I just drank, Barnea. So how can that truma be kosher for the Kohen? So you're going to have to take off trumas and maaseres from somewhere else, you see, on that truma itself, because otherwise you're giving this Kohen tevel to eat. So, okay, if that's the case, so when we take off tameh for Tahar, we should say, according to you, if we're allowing the Kohen to keep the Truma, even though it wasn't really correct Truma, so why don't we say that he's not allowed to use that Tame Truma unless you take off from somewhere else in order to be consistent? No. It's totally different, says the Gemara. The issue of taking off Tame and Tar, it really is Truma. That's not Mamish Benachiyev Alaptur. Because over here, it's Mamish Benachiyev Alaptur. I mean, the difference between an Atzitznakuv and an Atzitsheinonakuv is a Diaraisa. But over here, Midiaraita Truma Malyatahi. If you took off Tame and you gave it for Tahar, it's a Drabonin that says that we're treating it as if it's not a kosher hafrasha. Moshe Forman is falling asleep. Okay? So over here, Midioraita, Truma Malyatahi, can Rabbi Eloi, what did Rabbi Eloi say? It's only a Drabonin problem over here, Midioraita, it's kosher Truma, so the coin is allowed to eat it. What did Rabbi Eloi say? Dom Rabbi Eloi, Minayin the Torah Minayav Ara'a Al Hayafa. That the truth is you did something wrong, and even though the Torah said that it has to be barim chemet chelbo mimenu, you have to take off the best, afal pike, and the Torah itself tells me that if it were done improperly, it would 100% be truma anyway. How do I know that? Chetruma to truma. Dichtiv, because look what it says in the pasuk, v'lo tisu alav chet, barim chemet chelbo mimenu. And when you take off truma correctly, and you take off the best part of your tefuah, then you will not have done any avera. You won't be carrying any chait. Now, that means that if you did it wrong, and you didn't take the chelbo, that you will be carrying a chait. What's the chait? What's the chait? It's only a chait if the truma is truma, and then you gave the wrong kind of truma. But if you didn't, the truma wasn't chal, you'll just have to go and take off truma, but there's no chait because you didn't make it truma. So therefore, im eno kadosh nesiut chet lama, if the truma wasn't chal, so where is the supposed chet that you did? Mikan the torim in arala yafar shetruma tor truma. So you see from here, if you use poor quality and or tame, which is poor quality, in order to pater, it is definitely truma, and therefore there's no comparison of the two cases. So now, we've managed to work out all of the internal consistency in Masechet Truma in these cases and in Masechet Demai in these cases to explain why the various shitas that we have over here, of whether it's chal or not chal, b'diavad, and so on, how it works consistently in those Masechetas. Now, let's think about what Rav Chisda said, that the Chachomim were gozer, the weirdest thing, the Chachomim were gozer, something that is meant to be Truma, and they said, no, it's no longer truma. We hereby dub thee fish. You know, the old Catholic, Roman Catholic thing. It's, you know, Friday, but it's fish. Yeah, so we're going to say, we hereby dub thee fish, not truma. And how can they do that? I don't understand. If we just showed that it's really kosher, so then how do you explain the fact that we canceled the Diraisa? Omerle Rabbele Rav Chisda, and here exactly is where we get to the comparison to our Mishnah. So now we're about to pop out back to our Mishnah again and understand why we've spent all this time discussing the Mishnayas in Maseches Demai and the Mishnayas in Maseches Trumas, because we needed to get to this moment. So, Lididach asks Rabbah to Rav Chisda, Lididach, the Amrit lo asev lo klub kol ikar, you claim that this guy, in taking off Truma, achieved absolutely nothing. You mean nothing, that even the truma that he set aside is not considered to be truma. And you explained it to us. You gave an explanation of why we want that to be the case. But you did not explain how we got that to be the case, right? So you explained that, yes, because my taima, we're worried that the guy isn't going to listen to us, and therefore he won't give a second truma, and the coin is going to end up losing it. I understand. It's all very laudable, and it makes a heck of a lot of sense, but I don't understand how you can do it. Where did you get the power to do such a thing? You're trying to achieve the Kohen's getting a good truma, right? So, gzeira dima pasha velo mafresh. How did you do that? Mi'ika midi di midiraita have a truma, and now, because you're worried about the Kohen, you're going to cancel truma midiraita, umishum dima pasha avkua rabbanan lechulin? You took Truma D'Oraisa and you made it Chulin. V'chi Beit Din Matnin La'akor Davar Min HaTorah. I understand. How can Beis Din come along and take away a Din D'Oraisa? Which is basically what you're saying. You're saying Truma became Chulin. So, I mean, this is mamish papal dispensation. Oh, I hear by Dudley Fish. Where the heck does that come from? So it doesn't seem to make any sense. We don't have a mechanism to do that. You made it all, I mean, the whole thing. You did it. You did everything. You messed up everything. Omar Lay, what do you mean, says Rav Chisda to Rabba? What are you talking about? You never learned Yevamos. Back in Yevamos, or up front in Yevamos, depending where you started the Daf Yomi, you know. So, in Yevamos, it says, Atlo Tizbra, you don't know that? Vatnan, what about the Mishnah? And Mishnah said, Avlad Mamzer Mizeh Umizeh. It says over there, that, well, obviously, Bishlomi Mishani. I mean, I understand the second guy was never really married. It was all just adulterous because it turned out that Tazba was alive the whole time. So obviously, he's a Mamzer. We can't change that. But, I mean, the child from the first husband that she's going to go back to loyally to her original husband and remarry, the Mishnah claims that we're making a kosher person a Mamzer. But what doesn't make sense? Ishtoyi, Midiraisa, this woman is this guy's wife. V'yisro ma'al yahi, and you're making him a Mamzer. So you say, well, I can make him a Mamzer. It's all very nice to make him a Mamzer for Isser. But if you make him a Mamzer, you're telling him he can marry a Mamzeret, which is an Isser D'Oraita. How can you turn someone who is Usser in a Mamzeret and turn him into being Mutter for a Mamzeret? Well, if you see the Rabbanu can do that, so why can't they take something that was Truma and turn it back into Teva with a magic wand of dispensation? Says Rabba, what makes you think that that's the case? Just because it says that we're going to call him a Mamzer, it doesn't mean that he's Mutter in a Mamzeret, you know? Because as Shmuel explained, that when the Mishnah says that the Ben from the first husband, if she remarries him, is a Mamzer, she's still Usher b'Mamzeret. V'chinki ataravin amar Rabbi Yochanan, of course he's Usher b'Mamzeret, we can't be Mater him. The only reason we called him a Mamzer, a Maikarli Mamzer, was that he can't marry a Bas Yisrael. That's all we were saying. So we'll have to marry a Gioret, whatever, but he certainly is not, we're not going to be Mater him. Okay, you know, you answered that question. But I've got lots of rayas that the Chachomim, if they want to, can cancel the D'Oraisa. So he sent a letter afterwards with Rav Acha bar Rav Huna to Rabba to answer, to show his point. Ve'ein Beit Din Matnin La'akar Davar Min HaTorah, are you claiming that you can't do that? And what about the case in the Braita, where a guy marries a ketana, and this was a marriage midrabbanan. Remember that a ketana who doesn't have a father, either physically doesn't have a father, or where the father lost rishus over her, this is the case where he sold her for a shivcha, but whatever the case would be, and the rabbanan were metaken a rabbanan marriage, again, to avoid her being the victim of predators. So what if she doesn't like that marriage? She can walk out on that marriage. And that's called miyun. Moshe Forman put down miyun, by the way. I think we might have forgotten that in the list. And so over there, the question is, if she dies, at what point in the relationship is the husband actually given the right to inherit her? Because, I mean, if we give him the rights to a marriage, part of the rights of marriage include the rights of inheritance. Now, to give him absolute rights of inheritance in the event that she's still a ketana, something smells wrong about that. Because the marriage itself is not absolute. She could at any point walk out of the marriage, right? Now, it's very hard to walk out of a marriage when one is dead. And she died. So now we're going to say, okay, since she died, you know, who knows? Maybe the guy poisoned her because he found out that she was planning on walking out on him tomorrow, you know, and now he's going to inherit her. Haratzachta gam yarashta? I'm kidding, but I mean, I'm taking that case just to point out how absurd it is. I mean, you need to take into consideration that this is not an absolute marriage. I mean, it could have ended a minute before she died very easily. And therefore, how do you determine, like, at what point it really makes sense and it's appropriate for us to give him rights of Yerusha? Because remember, in giving him rights of Yerusha, if it's only a marriage of Midrabanan, we are stealing money away from her real Yoresh. And her real Yoresh, of course, is her family, from her father. If her father is actually alive, then he would be Yoresh. And it's possible he's alive, even though it's Kiddush Midrabanan. That's, we know it's possible to be a Yitoma B'chaye Ha'av. That's another musik that has to be written down. Yitoma B'chaye Ha'av. Except you can't write down things when you're fast asleep. Good. There you go. So Yitoma B'chaye Ha'av. All right, so here we're talking about at what point is it appropriate. It's Machlok is Be'chamei Beit Hillel. It's Be'chamei Omrim, Mishi Ta'amod B'komata. When she, according to Rashi, Ta'amod B'komata means she is now a full-fledged adult. So in other words, she's at the proper age. She's already over 12, and she already has simanim of being a post-puberty and so on. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says, since when do we ever use the word of Tamod Bekamata instead of Mishati Gadel? It's like, that's a crazy way of putting it. How would that be what it means? So therefore, Tosfos learns, when she looks old enough to be really married. And that's nothing to do with what really is. So at that point, if she's already, she's grown up and she is precocious, the fact that she might be still a ketana midiraisa, that's the point at which it's appropriate to say she wasn't going to walk out on him anymore because she's already a full-fledged wife. Beit Hillel says, no, she actually needs to have gone through the chuppah. So, even though, now we're going to see later on, that Beit Hillel holds that Lamaisa, a ketana can be mima'enet even after Nisuin, not only in Kedushin, and therefore in this case, what difference does it make? If she went to the chuppah, she still had the possibility of Miun, and we should say, well, does it make sense to give her property to a husband that she could have just walked out on? But basically what they're saying is that once you're at the point that you've already gone to the chuppah, it's not reasonable to say that she was going to walk out on him at any moment. So at that point, it becomes a full marriage. And Rebbe Eliezer Omer, it's only at such time that she actually sleeps with him. Now, this is not clear. What does that mean? We'll talk about it. And from that point on, what happens? He is Yoresher, and if he's a Kohen, he's Metamela. How could it be Metamela? That doesn't make any sense. It's Osir Midiraisa. He's not married to her. A Kohen is going to be Metamela. This, of course, is the reason we're bringing all of this up, right? Because Rav Chis is trying to show, I mean, look, don't look for consistency with the Diraisa when the Rabbonin end up making these takanas. So if he's a Kohen, he goes to Beis HaKforas, and she's allowed to eat truma. It's a Diraisa to eat truma. How can he give a ketana truma when there was no marriage midiraisa? Something is messed up over here. Okay, so all of this obviously figures in our backing up Rav Chisda in this letter. This is the letter that he's showing Rami, you see? So I just want to make sure that I understand that machlokas before we get to Rav Chisda. What was Beit Shammai? When Beit Shammai said, Bishtamod bekomata, so that means that, according to Beit Shammai, you do not need the chuppah. In other words, we have two completely opposite points of view, right? Mamish opposites. But Beit Shammai says the question of whether he's Yorsh or Matamela and so on. All of that is Nogea, one thing and one thing only. Is she Bikomata, whatever that means. Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. It has nothing to do with the chuppah. Mashienke Beit Hillel says, no, it has nothing to do with how old she is. It only has to do with the question of whether she was in the Knesset L'chuppah. So, do Beit Shammai actually mean that if she didn't go to the chuppah, that still she would be considered to be an absolute marriage? That doesn't make any sense. Because the halacha is that only after Nisuin is there the chiyuv, the right, I should say, to be Yorisha and so on, not after Kedushin. So how could Beit Shammai say that we're going to do better on the Nisuin, on the Kiddushei Ketana, who looks like a gedola, we're going to do better than we would for a real adult? That doesn't make sense. No. Ema misha tamod bekomata vitikanes l'chupa. No, Beit Shammai took for granted what Petillah was saying. Of course she was in a class of l'chupa, but we also need that tamod bekomata. V'halki karmer le'Beit Shammai le'Beit Hillel. You say when she came into the chupa. That is not absolutely true. Iyam da bekomata, yes, then you're right, then mahanya l'chupa. But if she wasn't yet amda bekomata, then lo mahanya l'chupa. Okay, so I understand that there was a third shita. What was Rebbe Eliezer's shita? Only if she sleeps with the guy, and that's mashma that even if she's still a ketana, never went to the chupa, etc., that he's saying that's considered to be enough to give him the Yerusha and everything? I thought Rebbe Eliezer says, and we're going to see this in the Mishnah later, Rebbe Eliezer himself says, Ein ma'aseh ketana klum, that it's not even considered, we don't even consider a marriage min rabbanan to really be a marriage in any way. It doesn't get any, it's just viewed as complete znus, except it's a znus that the rabbanan say is mutter. But they don't mean to say that it's considered to be a marriage. All they said was that it's better to have more or less a permanent shacking up arrangement than just to leave this girl to be, you know, sleeping with every guy that manages to seduce her. But they never said that shacking up with her is considered to be a marriage. They would just mock their shacking up with her. So there's complete stira in what Rebbe Eliezer says. I mean, he's the one who says, Ein ma'aseh ketana klum, and now he's going to say that once he sleeps with this ketana, he gets a right to her Yerusha. Obviously, what Rebbe Eliezer meant is she has to first be a gedola, and then she should be sleeping with him. And at that point, it becomes a deraisa kedushin, and so on. But nothing is given to a husband in a kedushin that is only derabbanan. And according to Tosfos, it has to be l'shem kedushin, and it's not automatically l'shem kedushin. That's what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. Okay. Anyway, getting back, says the Gemara, let's get back to what Rav Chisda was writing to Rabbah to show that he's right. So after quoting these dinim, so Rav Chisda writes in this letter, Katani Miyat, does it say or does it not say in this braita that he is allowed to be Yorisher? Now, how is he allowed to be Yorisher? We're stealing money because this money belongs to her father or father's family. It does not belong to him. So how come Midiraita Avua Yorit La Midrabbanan Yorit La Baal? See, the Rabbanan can basically do what they want, even if it's against the Diraisa. Says Rabbah, this is called a proof? Obviously, it's no proof, because if dinim of momenis, Moshe, open eyes, stand up. Hefker beit din ayah hefker. It's hefker. Yes, Bezdin certainly can be mafker momen, and that's what they did. The Omer Rebbe Yitzchak, how do we know that hefker beit din is hefker? We always say haya hefker because of the censor. Shenemar v'chol asher lo yavo l'shloshet hayamim ka'atzat asarim v'azakenim. So all of this we learn out from Ezra, where they were making all of the people who were intermarried and so on, they all had to come, and they had to deal with them. They threatened that anybody who doesn't show up is going to lose everything that he owns. What do you mean? Who gives you the right to take away his money? So you see that Bezdin does have that right. Okay. There's another makor, Rabbi Elazar Omer Miacha. Ele hanachalot asher nichalu Elazar haKohen v'Yoshua binun v'roshei ha'avot lematot b'nei Yisrael. Now this is very nogea, of course, even our parsha. So what in the world? I mean, I understand that Elazar haKohen and Yoshua binun gave out the Yerushas, and that was done up Yagoral and the whole thing, but why does it say v'roshei ha'avot lematot? I mean, I understand Roshei Amatot, those are the Nesiyim at the time. But what do Avot have to do with anything? Ma Inyan Roshim Eitzel Avot. How are we bringing in, and understand, these are two completely different issues. So what does it even mean? What are the Roshei? I mean, Roshei is Nesiyim. Why call them Avot? So what they're saying is that it's coming to tell me that they're the same, and that Ma Roshim, that in the same way that ma avot or manchilim b'neihem kol ma sheyirtzu, this is going according to the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who holds that a father can determine the size of the Yerusha of his children. So just like the avot can leave a will to give their children whatever they want, af roshim manchilim et haram kol ma sheyirtzu, the heads, meaning the people that are in charge of Beis Din, have the right to give people whatever money they believe. Okay, so whatever the makor is, we have two makorot over here, for Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, another thing for an invisible Moshe Forman who is supposedly standing up and did not fall asleep on his feet and fall down and hit his head. Here, oh, thank God, he survived. He survived the impact. Write down Hefker, Beis Din Hefker. Okay. All right, so now that's not a good proof. All right, says Rav Chisda, what about the second proof? It says if her husband's a Kohen, he goes to her funeral. Ha! Huh, you can't do that under the Rabbanan. That's the family is supposed to be taking care of her. And you made a so-called marriage, which is only to Rabbanan, and you're allowing a Kohen to be metame himself, bin Rabbanan? That's insane. So you see that the Rabbanan are going to cancel the Diraita. Says Rabbi, no, that's not the point. The point is that she becomes a mate mitzvah. Because once we've taken away the Yerusha, we are not going to also not let him bury. And I'll tell you why. Wait a minute. Don't try to tell me that, says Rav Chisda. That's not called a mate mitzvah. A mate mitzvah is someone there, nobody's around to bury. But in the event that you could shout out, hey, I need help, somebody is dead, we need to bury him. If you could do that, that's not a mate mitzvah. And a Kohen is not allowed to be metame if there's people that he could shout to that will bury the mate mitzvah. So Koshkin over here, I mean, he could call the family and that would be enough. How did we turn it into a mate mitzvah? Says Rabbah, no, it is a mate mitzvah. Because even if she would call the family and say, I've been shot, I'm dying, come and bury me, help. Even if she was going to call them, they won't take the call. Why won't they take the call? They'll say, get out of here. We're not even going to inherit you. We're going to come around and bury you. Let the guy who stole all our money, let him bury you. So therefore, we consider that to be a make mitzvah, which is rather astounding. I mean, that this should be considered to be a mate mitzvah. It's obviously not a real mate mitzvah. And Tosis points out, we're not going to say that in any case where you don't have Yerusha, then a Kohen should be metame, and that it's considered to be a mate mitzvah. So it's clearly not. So the idea of a year is that yesh koach biyad chachomim lakor dover min ha-tera. This is a very important yesod of Tosis. That where something is actually, bedover hadomeh, it's similar to a mate mitzvah. Therefore, there is a mechanism. And since there's no Yerusha, it's as if she's a mate mitzvah, even though she's not truly a mate mitzvah, which he proves. You see from here, and this is a klal that the Tosfos has, which the Chazon Ish speaks at length, something that is domeh, and it's similar to what it is that the Diraisa has said, since the Torah has established that there's a concept of taking care of the dead when it's your responsibility, and then even when you're a Kohen, that you should be metameh for it, this is one of those occasions. And therefore, they can define this as being the equivalent of a make mitzvah. The general idea being, as the Chazon Ish speaks about so often, is that many of the issues of the Torah are given al pi ha-mitzvah that the Chachomim understand and the way they defined it. But obviously, it has to be similar. So what is considered to be an idea that is similar to testimony? What is considered to be a mate that is similar to a mate mitzvah? And so on and so forth. The Beis Din has a right to make those definitions binding on Yisrael. Okay, so now we've seen the cases that we have over here of the Nisui Ketana that he wanted to bring as a Raya, and we'll continue tomorrow. Well, it's just at least the last part, which was the Truma. How do we explain the fact that we're allowed to eat Truma The Ochelet Begino Truma, that must be talking about Truma Derabonin, because otherwise we'd be opening over the Yisr of Achila Truma by a Zar. So since the Rabbonin were the one who would Kovea the Dinam of the Truma, they could be Kovea that she has a Dinam Achila's Truma through a Kedushin Derabonin. Okay, so we still are on our way to understanding better all of these dinim that have brought us into this new long trajectory, which is somewhat tangential, but clearly is part of the whole idea of the Mishnah, which itself is part of the whole idea of the circumstantial change in the status of halachas that seem to be ironclad. And that, of course, is the essential point of what we're going to be going through in Megillat Rut. The whole thing seems to be antithetical to the halacha. And based on the ideas of Yibum, and all of a sudden the Torah is being Matir Arayas, we extend this to all types of weird activities that are not really part of the D'oraisa. This woman obviously is not a true Yivama. Boaz comes along and insists that not only is she muteret, but that there's a chiev to tem. And it's a whole crazy story, all based on the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set up initially a built-in, so to speak, bedibur echad, that arayas are asurais, but they're also mitzvahs. And this extends into the way that we look at the rotzen of the Torah to achieve certain ends, and they are achieved through what appear to be illegitimate ways. And this is part of our Mishnah that has created a heter for a woman not to be an aguna, based, and this is just our first shot, based on the idea of an edus of an edecha, that the chachamim are going to be machshev, and that's why there's so many different approaches in the Rishonim as to how exactly this ties into what is the mechanism. But overall, we understand that it is part of the entire idea of Yevamas, which, remember, is the place where we started up talking about the idea of the different limudim from the Torah, because we wanted to talk about legitimate memes and illegitimate memes, and therefore went through all of the Midah, Shatar, and the Dreshes, back at the beginning of the Masechtim, in the first few dafs, and this is very much, therefore, part of the overall flow of the Masechet, and should not really be viewed as mere tangents in understanding a particular mitzvah. But we'll get back to it, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. Meanwhile, wishing you all a wonderful, wonderful day.